Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. If you go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsor information on the site, you could, for just $20, have your name said right here along with something nice about you. We love to get your message out, and it's an easy way for you to do that and help the show. Or you can always contribute to our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie.
On this Fortnite edition of Nerd and Tie, Wonder Woman 2 gets a release date, Stargate Origins is announced, the Robotech movie is somehow still happening, and some crazy stuff is going on with abortive Pokemon festivals, a ban at Kitsune Con, the Louisville Fandom Fest, and Anime Iowa. All that in your mailbag this Fortnite on Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
It's so good to be back on the show after some insanity and some, you know, it's been a crazy last couple weeks for us, but, you know, we're back.
Yeah, for those of you who like to watch the video version, sorry, you'll get stuck with the still image on YouTube again, because, frankly, I want to get the audio fixed before I get the cameras fixed. But say who we are, Nick.
As Trey has mentioned, I am, of course, Nick Izumi.
Oh, hello, Mr. Izumi.
The once all-knowing, but now mostly just kind of knowing. Making fun of my name mispronunciation, we got Trey the Undying Dorn.
Yesterday morning, I was on a lake. Today, I am with you. I haven't decided which... The lake is better. No, I'm sorry. Just the lake is better.
And having survived several long road trips that I was around for about half of, here is Gen Proc.
I found crumbs in my chair, and I don't know where they came from.
Probably food.
Bamf. Bamf, have you been eating in my chair again?
Bamf, for those at home, is a cat. Cats often don't carry their food. Like, I mean, they eat it right where they are unless they're gifting it to you.
So I guess, are we, I realize as I'm looking at the show rundown that we don't have, we're not really covering anything from San Diego Comic-Con yet.
Well, I mean, some of the stuff, at least one of these stories was okay. From Comic-Con. It was just early in Comic-Con that it was announced. But we'll get to that in after the first story.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Comic-Con this year didn't really have a lot of big... Like, it had some news, but most of it was just a bunch of trailer drops. And, like, trailer for thing we already knew was coming isn't necessarily that exciting a news story.
That's true. Not to mention... I mean, you know... Yeah, that's really about all there was.
Yeah.
But I know, speaking of things that we knew were coming, I'm very excited that we know when something that we actually want is coming. Very excited to report that Wonder Woman 2 already has a release date.
What?
Yeah. DC, movie that broke that DC Carnival of Sadness cycle, Wonder Woman, is getting its much-deserved sequel on December 13th of 2019. Patty Jenkins is expected to return as the director, which is good, because she already has ideas for the story, and she rocked the last one, so why not?
Yeah, although she's not technically signed on yet.
Gosh, I hope they get her back, though.
They should have locked her in for 10... Oh, she... I'm certain she'll be back.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, yeah, they should be giving her a... They should be giving her a good pay increase, because...
Well, this is... I mean...
I think she may have single-handedly saved their franchise.
Well, the fact is, the 2019 is a really soon release date for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
I think people were expecting to see, you know... the first movie for another character show up there before her sequel did, and before Wonder Woman came out. And I think that Wonder Woman, the fact is that it is the most successful film, at least in the States, in the DCEU is really symptomatic. There are rumors that Zack Snyder is pretty much no longer in charge of the DCEU, in part because of, you know, it's, he had to resign from Justice League because of a really horrific personal family situation.
Right.
But he was still like he was still supposed to be the guiding hand, but I think the success of Wonder Woman pretty much is guaranteed that Warner Brothers is no longer going to be following any blueprint by him. He'll still be executive producer.
Good.
He'll still be executive producer on the films that he started to help move forward, like The Flash and Aquaman. But I think that Jeff Johns' voice is much more likely to be the only one we're hearing. And there's rumors that Joss Whedon is.
But even with like stuff like The Flash, that's already turning into a drastically different monster.
Oh, well, Justice League is. Mm-hmm. The reshoots are extensive that they're doing. They are completely, apparently, reshooting large portions of the story segments and
mm-hmm.
just holding on to Zack Snyder's action scenes.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is our second set of extensive reshoots, if you think about it, because they had to do reshoots after Batman v Superman when it turned out no one liked that movie.
Yeah,
so I think
that it's really clear that the Justice League movie we're getting is going to have a much higher influence of Joss Whedon than we thought. And Wonder Woman 2 happening is, I think, a really important thing because it effectively, it took the financial success of a movie like Wonder Woman for the studio executives to understand what everyone else has been saying. Critics and fans have been asking for, a different tone. Snyder's dark tone that he likes to deconstruct and doesn't actually seem to like superheroes. And if you go by quotes that he said throughout the past, it's he really doesn't like superheroes. And they put him in charge of a superhero franchise. And it's obviously with Wonder Woman being much more successful than anything else that they've done so far, I think it's really obvious that it finally was a wake-up call to Warner Brothers executives.
I'm glad that they're going to... I'm glad that they had that wake-up call. I'm still not sure I'm convinced that they can save Justice League at this point, but...
I think it'll be watchable.
Yeah, but watchable is very different from, like, you know, good.
Well, I don't consider Suicide Squad watchable.
Okay. That's fair.
So, I mean, that's my watchable means I will walk out of the movie going, I'm okay having... Well, to be fair, I think Man of Steel was watchable.
That's fair.
I don't think it was a good Superman movie. But it was watchable. Like, I will give Zack Snyder credit to the fact that Man of Steel is an entertaining film. It is not a Superman movie.
Right.
It is... If we called him Ultraman, it would be great.
Exactly. But I said that before. It's an excellent version of Grant Morrison's Earth 2 book.
I thought that was Earth 3.
It had been Earth 3 in previous continuities, and it has returned to being Earth 3. But when Grant Morrison did his book, it was Earth 2.
Okay. Well, I haven't read that particular thing. I'm
Justice
gonna,
League Earth 2.
I'm
going to
admit that everything you're saying makes total sense, but I'm going to admit that I might have been thinking about the Jerry O'Connell series, My Secret Identity. So, in which he refers to himself as Ultraman in the pilot and in the opening theme to the show. So, by the way, if you've never watched My Secret Identity, I really loved it when I was, like, 10. I don't know if it holds up.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, it's about a teenager who gets superpowers after getting zapped by a mad scientist, his neighbor mad scientist, like, Super Ray. And he has super strength, but his ability to fly is that he starts floating. And so he actually uses aerosol spray cans to steer. I don't know. It's the whole like average, you know, teenager with superpowers show.
Okay.
I think it's aimed at children. I was a child when I watched it, so. You'll never guess my secret identity. What's on the inside hiding out? Sorry.
Well,
I might remember the entire theme song quite vividly. Again, I loved it when I was a kid. I don't know if it's any good. Oh, I don't know, Gen. What do you think about
that sure
Gen, are you excited for Wonder Woman 2?
I will be as soon as I see the first one.
Oh, my God!
I don't watch movies.
You should watch this movie.
I know I should. Just haven't gotten around to it.
Gen, my heart, it hurts. Because you haven't seen Wonder Woman.
I do think you'll enjoy it, Gen.
Yeah, you'll like it. It's good. Or you won't like it, but it'll still be good, and it'll be your fault for not liking a good thing. Oh, speaking of things
sure
that might have sounded like good idea before anyone said it out loud.
No.
One of the things that was actually announced at Comic-Con is something called in the Stargate franchise for once, finally, and it's not a reboot.
Wah.
It is, in fact, Stargate Origins. Which is, and Stargate is back, and it's in continuity with the TV series, most likely. So that's exciting. Stargate Origins is going to be a web series. It's going to be 10 episodes. Each are like 10 minutes long. So effectively, we'll have the amount of content of a movie at the end of it. But other things have been released, like this Electra Woman and Dinah Girl was, with Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart, that movie was released as a web series initially before the movie cut came out. You should go watch that, by the way. More people need to watch that. Distributed by Lionsgate. Anyways, but so Stargate Origins is going to be about Catherine Langford, who, if you watch the... her character's both in the movie and in the TV series. She was... When the gate was unearthed in at the beginning of the movie... she's a little girl who sees it, you know, on Earth in Egypt in the early 20th century. And then, she's the one who in the film recruits, James Spader's character, Daniel. She's the one who recruits him. She's the old lady who recruits him. And then she also, appears in the, SG-1 TV series played by a different actress minus an accent that with an American accent, she's American in the TV series. But she didn't sound American in the movie, but whatever. It's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer type thing. A version of the movie happened, but not exactly. But
right.
So it's supposed to be about her as a young woman because they had the Stargate starting at the, you know, they had the Stargate for decades before they got it working in the continuities, except... Stargate Origins is supposed to show the beginning of the Stargate program, and it's... I don't know where they're going to go with it. So, okay, minor spoilers for early seasons of SG-1, there's an episode where it turns out that they did get the gate working once, decades ago, and this guy Ernest, who is Catherine Langford's fiancé, walked through and disappeared. But that's supposed to be the only time the gate ever worked. And he never came back. And, yeah, you could build up to that story, but here's the thing. The end of that story plays out in an SG-1 episode where they find out what happened to him and where he went. And they finish the story. So, like, we're going to spend 100 minutes doing what? Because the promo image shows Catherine as a young woman... from behind. I don't think they've cast the part yet. And we like, either they're going to have to retcon a bunch of stuff, or they're going to tell us a story the only fans who really would be clamoring to watch a Stargate web series, they're going to tell a story they already know, or they're going to retcon something that those fans care about. So that's confusing.
It's like a no-win situation.
I know. It's premiering on the Stargate Command website, which is being described as a new streaming platform. And it's going to have some stuff for free, but some stuff's going to be paid. And I don't know what their plan is. Like, is the series going to cost money? Is it going to be free and then behind the scenes cost money? They say some stuff's going to be free. What? Like, who knows? But Lord knows we need another specialty streaming service.
As many 100 specialty streaming services. Specialty streaming services every day. 100-year specialty streaming services.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical about this. On the one hand, I'm glad that MGM is going back and making more Stargate. On the other hand, I'd rather have a TV movie than a TV movie cut into tiny pieces.
Yeah, legit.
And honestly, it's frustrating because they left Universe off on a cliffhanger after the second season. Atlantis ends in rather dramatic fashion, and there's some really cool stories they could pull from there. There are so many different ways. Or you could just do a whole new group of people with the Stargate franchise in current day. Like, there are so many different routes you could take this thing, but instead, they're doing a frickin' prequel full of characters. Like, we already know what happens to these characters. Like, I know no matter what happens to Catherine Langford that she lives a long, fulfilling life and gets the Stargate program going. Like, there. That's the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know... what a bunch of maroons.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, on the one hand, I'm excited because, like, I haven't gotten new Stargate in a really long time. On the other hand, I'm like, is this what I wanted? Is this the thing? I don't know. I kind of make.
Well,
it's
what you're
everything.
Getting, so.
Apparently. It's, I don't know, but everyone's doing the prequel. You know, it's, they say that Stargate just kind of imitated the Star Treks where, you know, you've got the Stargate on the space. You know, you've got SG-1 is your next generation. Then you got Atlantis, you know, where they're on an alien space station that they've kind of taken over, you know, Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the one where they're a ship full of people who got stranded on the other side of the universe, Voyager. And now we got... The newest whole dingamaloo is a prequel set to premiere on a streaming service no one wants to pay for. Well, so do I compare this to Discovery or to Enterprise? Kind of Discovery Enterprise.
Yeah, Discovery. Oh, God.
It's Discover Prize.
Oh, boy. I don't know how I feel about. I just don't know how I feel about this prequel game.
Why do we have to play? I go back to Discovery also. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm excited for Discovery, with Star Trek Discovery. And I'm going to watch the crap out of it. But, like, why do we have to play on these continuity snarls? Like, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, when these shows came out, like, and it's really, we stopped going forward after Voyager, and, like, there's all this cool stuff in the galaxy, there are all these races, and as humanity pushes out into new territory, you can just add a new race. You know?
It's like, that's a recurring thing I'm noticing in nerddom, is that it's almost like the companies are afraid to take risks now, so they go for prequels so that they have to use familiar stuff. So that no matter what, they absolutely have to use familiar stuff in what they're doing.
And that's, and that's why, like...
And it's a shame. It really is.
That's why one of my favorite TV series right now is the Marvel movies. Because it's going forward. And they're not doing any of this prequel stuff. Oh, wait. Captain Marvel's set in the 90s. Crap.
Well, eh.
Who's going to be retroactively a Skrull?
I'm still going to kind of at that, because that still seems minor compared to...
Pepper Potts is a Skrull. I'm calling it.
Even franchises I like have been falling back on that. Like, look at, Rogue One is one of my favorite Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that, in terms of the aesthetic and the setting, they went super safe. You know, it's okay. Just familiar stuff.
Well, Star Wars is officially having more prequels than sequels.
Uh-huh.
It does. Right now, it has the same number, but there are more with Han Solo in production, with all these Star Wars stories keep being set earlier on the timeline.
Not to mention two cartoon series that are canon.
Yeah.
Two canon cartoon series that are both set before the original trilogy.
Star Wars went forward in the original trilogy, and then it went forward with Episode 7 and will with 8 and 9, but all the other stuff is taking place prior to the current story, and most of it's taking place prior to the first movie.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's like the prequel trilogy, I understand, because he did, before Empire came out, relabel the first Star Wars Episode 4 A New Hope. You know, he set up that he wanted to do prequels way back during the original trilogy, and so I can handle having the three prequels, but...
And again, I love Rogue One. I absolutely love that movie. It's one of my favorite Star Wars movies.
Well, the listeners at home can't see the poster behind you.
I was about to say, yeah, that's the thing. I was about to say, because I know we're not broadcasting video, they can't see, I keep the poster on my set here in my studio. I loved Rogue One, but I don't...
I've got a Shaq Fu box on my set for the Amiga. I'm still building the new set, which is part of the reason why we're not doing video, because I'm having computer problems too that I haven't gotten resolved since moving to the new studio. But one of the new permanent fixtures is I have dug out the boxed Amiga copy of Shaq Fu.
I don't need more prequels. Like, if we don't touch on what happened before Episode 4 ever again, I'll be great.
So
I'll be absolutely great.
So yeah, to kind of haul it back to Stargate Origins, to put a cap on the story, it's a thing that's happening. It's going to be about 100 minutes long, and it's effectively a prequel movie. Dressed up like a series, and it's going to be a thing, and we don't know casting yet, we don't know release schedule, but it means that if this does well, we may see more Stargate down the line, because MGM wants money. But I'd rather see in-continuity prequels than a reboot.
Well, it's funny you should mention reboots, especially reboots no one asked for.
And we're not talking about the reboot.
Although that is a reboot no one asked for.
Yeah.
No, it's up next is my favorite topic.
Talk about Robotech.
Oh yeah, Harmony Gold, my favorite television producers who haven't made anything new in more than two decades. And, at least not on television. They've made some straight-to-video movies. And also real estate developers, apparently, are still trying to keep Robotech alive, despite the fact that, you know, it's on life support and no one cares and no one should care because it's no longer relevant or useful. Anyway, so...
But Rockabert Axelrod needs to do more conventions.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't know. He was at Robotech.
Good God. Robotech, the live action movie that was first announced back in 2007, you know, when Transformers was a big hit, everyone who had a Hi Megatron. Trey is waving Beast Machines Megatron at me.
Technically, the Robotech in disguise because the toy came out late.
Oh, well. Anyway, back when the first Transformers movie came out, everyone wanted to get on this cartoons from the 80s bandwagon with live-action movies. So there was a Voltron movie that was announced that we haven't heard anything about since then. And the Robotech...
Voltron series.
Because we got a new Voltron series that's objectively better than the original. And meanwhile, Robotech keeps kicking around. Like, they announced this movie, then nothing happened. Then Robotech Academy almost happened, and that was an utter catastrophe.
That Kickstarter bombed so hard.
And now they're back to the movie. Sony is apparently producing it, and they have announced that they found a director,
another director.
Yeah, a new director, because this has gone through several directors who've come and gone. Andy Muschietti. Okay. He is fresh off the forthcoming remake of Stephen King's It.
Well, when
that's,
you think properties remade from the 80s.
Yeah, I guess that's his qualification. What do we even do with this? Like, I decided
I love
this
story so much because I think they really think it's going to happen.
It's amazing.
It's like, so, I mean, the last time we heard about this movie was like 2.5 years ago when Warner Brothers assured us it was still happening, and then couple weeks later, it immediately got shuffled over to Sony. Like, a month afterwards, it went, like, Warner Brothers told everyone it was still happening, and then a month later, it got shuffled over to Sony. Like, and so now it's Sony's project, but, like, nobody wants this movie. And, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Gianni Nannari and Mark Canton have been trying to produce this for years and years and years, and it's who is their target audience? Because, I mean...
Well, yeah, Robotech is, depending on who you ask, there are really only two branches at this. Okay, arguably there are three branches.
Yeah.
There are the, you have the old, there are nostalgic people who remember watching Robotech when they were kids.
That'd
that
be me.
Don't know what...
well, but I know what anime, yeah.
I would say, yeah, and there are two branches of that nostalgia. There are the people who either don't know what anime is and just remember it fondly as a show that they watched when they were a kid, or there are the people who do know what anime is and know that there was an original Japanese version, and most of them would probably rather watch that.
But we can't because of stupid Harmony Gold.
Okay, that's the one good thing Harmony Gold has done, sort of. If you have Amazon streaming services, they have the three original shows up there subtitled.
Oh, good, because I hate Macross, but I like the other ones.
Macross, Southern Cross, and Most PETA are all up, and yeah, you can watch Most PETA in all of its transvestite on a transforming robot bike glory.
Well, now I need to watch it because I don't remember that at all.
Oh yeah. There's a member of their team is a pop singer who when they're on stage, they have a female persona, and then as a resistance fighter, it's a dude. But like he's a full on cross dresser, and some of the characters are like, oh my god, Yellow Belmont, she's so hot, and then he's like, aren't I though? And they're like, whoa. I love Yellow Belmont. We go back to this, though. I mean, it's so weird watching, even if we don't talk about, or rather, in addition to this movie that is still somehow happening, Harmony Gold's handling of this franchise is just so bizarre right now. The comics... They just did a new Robotech, started a new Robotech comic series that their website claims is getting good reviews, but most of the other reviews that I have found have not been so generous. They are bringing in, starting at issue 8, they're going to have famous Transformers writer Simon Furman take over the book.
Oh, that can't hurt.
Simon Furman did write my number one Transformers thing that you should be looking at that you probably haven't heard of. So yeah, he's a good writer. They've licensed new Robotech board games, but apparently didn't tell their tabletop gaming company that that's what they were doing. At least that was my takeaway when a couple weeks ago Palladium Games made the announcement that the board games that Harmony Gold is releasing has nothing to do with them.
Yeah, they probably weren't too happy with that.
Probably not.
They made a really passive aggressive tweet.
And then yeah, the they're and judging by the comic and from the fact that they're still putting out toys of Macross characters and Mecha, I'm guessing they still have the Macross license. It's
Well,
just,
can we be sure about that?
yeah, that's the other thing we're not even sure about. The only other thing that I know that they're doing right now is they're suing the BattleTech people again because the new MechWarrior game has Mecha that sort of look like Robotech Destroids.
Didn't BattleTech originally license a lot of those Macross designs?
Yeah, that's another huge can of worms. Was back in the 90s, this was when this lawsuit thing had started happening. And yes, the original version of BattleTech, they worked directly with Tatsunoko, and so you had a bunch of Mecha, not just from Macross, but also from Dogrum, Crusher Joe, a couple other classic Mecha anime, because it was easier to use line art and designs of already existing robots.
Yeah.
And to just pay a Japanese studio to use their likenesses. And the studio was all too willing to do it. Then Harmony Gold came in because at that same time in the 90s, they had made reissues of Robotech toys part of the Exo Squad toy line, even though it had nothing to do with Exo Squad, which actually was a good cartoon.
I remember watching that
But
show as a kid.
yeah, it was awesome.
Not as a
But,
kid, but as a teenager.
Yeah, they claimed that it violated their intellectual property and that it hurt them somehow. And at the time, the judge ruled in favor of Harmony Gold. So the BattleTech community calls all of those Mecha the Unseen now, or at least they did for a while. Recently, those Mecha were brought back into the game, still looking similar-ish, but being drastically redesigned.
Yeah.
And Harmony Gold only started caring when this new video game came out. The
Jesus.
redesigns have been around for years. So, now I know it's like all Harmony Gold does with the license anymore is sell it to toy companies and comic book companies, and or that is sell them the rights to use those likenesses and sue people. That's really all they do.
Well,
It's a joke.
I'm not a big fan of that. Well, Harmony Gold's a freaking
I just want them to die.
mess.
Because the thing is, that's the thing. Robotech is historically significant, but it had its place, and that place was the 80s. And I'm not opposed to it still being in print, but I would love to be able to get physical releases of the three original cartoons too.
You know what else is
Saying.
historically significant? The Holocaust. I don't want it to happen again.
Right,
I
exactly.
thought that was
Normally, I'm the
clever.
one complaining about a Harmony Gold, but Trey's the one who compared it to the Holocaust. Heard it here first.
Cultural destruction. I wish I could draw more parallels. Oh, I'm sorry. I would like to apologize to our listeners for bringing up the Holocaust, and I normally would even make a joke comparing Harmony Gold to worse than the Holocaust, but no. But for the record, Harmony Gold is not as bad as the Holocaust.
I would, however, like to
Slightly.
apologize to our listeners for bringing up Harmony Gold.
Yes.
So
Oh.
the Robotech movie, I guess it's happening. It's gonna be a colossal piece of crap.
All right.
I'm just going to say it now. Anyway.
So, speaking of colossal pieces of crap. Heyo. So, a couple weeks ago, KitsuneCon was held in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I was not there. Were either of you there?
We were.
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Both of us.
I was at a vendor, at an artist booth that weekend.
So, right before the convention, just a few days before the convention, KitsuneCon made an announcement saying that they were banning YouTuber Desolator Magic from the event. Desolator Magic, he runs a YouTube channel based around Magic the Gathering. He's got about 26,000 subscribers, so nothing to slouch at for a YouTube channel about Magic the Gathering, because just there aren't a lot of those. But he's also kind of a dick. But that's just my personal opinion. Now it's he's a bit right wing also, as in a bit alt right wing. But the reason why he was banned was due to weapons concerns. Now, in a video posted on July 1st, Desolator Magic announced he was coming to KitsuneCon. This isn't too surprising. I mean, he's not from Green Bay, but he's not, from that far away. But some of the attendees were actually, who had heard his video and had noticed it, were a little concerned. And the reason why we say it was a weapons concern is, actually, I'm just gonna play you guys the audio from the video. He has taken this video down from the internet, but we archived a copy. And there's a lot in this video. We're not going to reproduce it, obviously, entirely, because that would be a violation of his copyright. But for fair use purposes, we can play this little bit of it. And this is specifically the part in which people concerned. This is after he's announced that he's coming, and that he was going to try to give away things to people, and that they shouldn't expect too much interaction from him.
Really be like, here, have a 5,000 quantity box of commons, no backsies. Bye. Also, considering the sheer volume of threats I get on Twitter and on YouTube and Reddit and everywhere else, if you so much as look at me wrong, I'm probably going to stab you. So just FYI, you might not want to freak me out. You might want to come at me within my full vision arc and kind of slowly. That said, if you do want to fight me, just announce it first. No cheap shots or I will shoot you. But anyway, more about KitsuneCon. It is awesome. Do not go there just for me. I'm not.
So you might notice the line where he says that if people want to start that cheap shot, he will shoot you. This is because Desolator Magic proudly announces multiple times in many videos how he carries a concealed weapon, carries a gun. Now, that is perfectly legal in the state of Wisconsin. He is permitted, as far as I know. He's not breaking any laws having that gun. But the problem is that KitsuneCon explicitly on their website, and you can find it, and I've double-checked, that policy has been posted for years. I double-checked on archive.org that they explicitly ban firearms from the convention. This is a really typical policy at conventions. Now,
it's not just the convention itself. It's more of, like, the convention space itself and the hotels.
Yeah, the hotel bans it too.
According to KitsuneCon staff, the hotel bans guns, but there are hotels that don't ban guns, but still those conventions often ban guns. This is not weird. So the fact is that he was talking about bringing a gun into a convention that explicitly bans firearms. And now he claims he couldn't find the policy in a later video. He claims he couldn't find it anywhere on the website. I found it in, like, 2 seconds. So he claims to have scoured it. I will say that it is under the cosplay rules, but it's because most anime conventions And you can see this. It's on Anime Milwaukee keeps it under their cosplay rules. No Brand Con's rules keep it under cosplay rules. It's like, I think GeekCon is the only con in Wisconsin who's checking their rules, just has it under a general FAQ. I will say Nerd and Tech Expo, when we ran ours, we put it under a separate weapons policy under the attendee area, but it's because we didn't post cosplay rules. Like, if we'd had a cosplay rules say page, we would have put it there. And it's because the historically, the only reason why anyone would try to bring any weapon into a convention was for cosplay purposes. And yep. So that's why that policy tends to get stuck in that section of the policies. Now, I know that Desolator Magic himself in his video says he doesn't go to a lot of conventions. And so maybe he's just really unfamiliar with the culture. But the fact is, this is a really common policy. And he's put up a whole video angrily putting up the convention director's email. He also put up our emails because we wrote an article about it. But, like,
I shouldn't laugh.
Here's the thing. It's Desolator Magic was talking about bringing a gun to a convention in the wake of what happened at Phoenix Comic Con not that long ago. For those who don't know, at Phoenix Comic Con, an armed gunman was attempting to assassinate Jason David Frank. And
like you do.
Like you do, apparently. And he was caught. He was arrested.
Thank God.
He was charged by Phoenix police. And it's because people paid attention on social media people who knew him on social media figured he was bringing guns to the convention, which explicitly banned weapons. Phoenix Comic Con did have weapons checkpoints, but the guy was purposely avoiding them. But the fact is that he had the gun. Someone called the cops. The cops dealt with it. It was done. The shooting, and he had also talked about shooting other people, but any of that threat was avoided. This happened again a couple years ago at the Pokemon World Championships, where two guys drove across multiple states to Boston. I think they were from Iowa, but it was a Midwestern state. They drove with a number of weapons and a trunk full of ammunition, and they were stopped and arrested by police. The fact is the conventions have, on numerous occasions, had to deal with this, and guns being banned is normal. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know that, but Desolator Magic doesn't believe us. And he also thinks that apparently other people having guns in the convention would make it safer. Because, you know, when you're in a crowd full of people, the best thing to do is to fire into it, right? To stop a bad guy?
Yeah, exactly.
To fire into a crowd of people? And when you call the police about a shooting, the best thing to do is have another guy shooting and have a gun out? Because the cops really know how to differentiate between you and the bad shooter. I'm just like, any trained person, any like trained law enforcement will tell you that they wouldn't fire. Like, you talk about people with the Aurora shooting, like at the movie theater years and years and years ago, and people will talk about how if they had been concealed carry, like if they had had guns, they wouldn't have been able to safely shoot at the gunman because it would have hit other bystanders and cause more damage. But but Desolator Magic demands that in multiple videos that the place would be safer if everyone was armed, and except the fact is they wouldn't be. And statistically, and anyone who's had proper firearms training will tell you probably that pulling out a gun in the middle of a crowded space would probably just cause a panic. And that's the whole thing. Like, he talks about pulling out the gun to...
Uh-huh.
And in another video, he talked about, like, defusing situations by pulling out his gun. Like, I'm just like, that. If he even thought about doing that in a convention full of people, he would more likely cause a panic and cause a problem far more than any potential, like, thing he'd be... What is up with this dude? So, yeah, Desolator Magic got banned and has been whined about it for... He demanded he didn't care and then recorded two follow-up videos about how much he didn't care, including a 30-minute one.
He doesn't care that much.
He so doesn't care. Again, I know when you don't care about something, you record a 30-minute video about it, right?
Oh, of course. I don't 30, just,
Gen
like,
goes 40 minutes.
Ignore it and move on with my life because I don't care about it. No.
Yeah, so it's honestly like I think some of the videos are like the afterwards videos are still up, and where he like keeps demanding like calling other people snowflakes about how they're so easily offended, and then like has literally recorded a 30-minute video about like how he's like so angry about it. I'm like, you are so fragile, man. You're so fragile. You got to carry a gun everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like it's he. We did in our original article talk about how he had pulled out one of the like offhand comments he talked about bringing out a gun. He mentioned he did it while playing Pokemon Go, and so I assumed he did it because of a dispute involving Pokemon Go, like a normal person would. Like if the only detail you mention is the game, you assume that it's about the game. But no, he clarified in some other stuff that in our comment section that he pulled out a gun while playing Pokemon Go because some guy was coming at him at speed in a dark alley at night. And, well, first off, I'm not going to say the town he lives in. I know what town he lives in. Because, you know, I did 5 minutes of research on the internet and they talk about it on Reddit when making fun of him. He does not live. I live in about the same size town, and I will tell you that I know the statistics that there are like 14 robberies a year in his town. At least there were. I think it was the 2015 number. So you know that could have gone down slightly, but he talks about how he flashed his gun and the guy ran away. First off, I think it could have been just some college student who got scared. But even if it was some guy trying to rob him. Which, again, we only, you know, the only details we have about this are from Desolator Magic. All I can think of is, what were you doing in a dark alley at night?
Playing
you
Pokemon
alone,
Go.
You moron.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know. I grew up in an actual city. You know, like, they just busted a carjacking ring in my parents' neighborhood. Like, I grew up where the, like, I grew up in what I consider to be a fairly safe neighborhood, and that just happened. Like, people have tried to steal my parents' car while they were sleeping. I always felt safe walking around at night. I never had to carry a gun. But I also was smart enough to say, hey, that's a dark alley. I'm not going to walk down it at night. Because I'm not a bozo. You know? Don't be an idiot. Like, it's just funny. He talks about having to carry a gun. And I'm like, you know, or you could just not be stupid. I mean, my way is a lot less expensive. You know.
Yeah, well, talk about Pokemon Go getting people upset.
Transition.
So, Pokemon Go recently had their big festival, Pokemon Go Fest, down in Chicago. And it was real exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You could go and get, like, if you paid the $25 ticket that you actually got, like, that you didn't get from scalpers and therefore had to pay, like, hundreds more than the $25.
I have thoughts on this.
You could go and they would have all the region-locked Pokemon there for you to catch, and they would have, like, you'd be able to unlock all the legendaries and get lots of bonuses for everybody, and it was really cool, except there were way too many people than they were expecting.
Well, they do exactly, well, that I'll say, like, the line situation, like, so the lines were, like, going really far. Like, I know some people who were there who have, like, taken showed photos of the line. I know, Phil Bond, who's done some stuff with Famicom Dojo, he was there, and I don't understand why they didn't, like, the line situation, I think, is ridiculous, because they sold the number of tickets. Like,
yeah,
they knew exactly how many people were coming.
Right? But, but as usual, as it is with avid Pokemon Go players, we're very used to lagging out and not being able to connect to the game we want to.
So I want to point out that was not a special effect. Gen's voice, her signal really did just degrade while saying lagging out, very appropriately.
Of course.
Yeah. So the issue wasn't with the actual Niantic servers. It was just the cellular networks, if I can enunciate correctly. Whew.
Yeah, it's players weren't able to connect to the raids and a lot of those special events. Like, the game just was not playable.
Yeah. And it's just like, hey, if you're, you know, if you're doing an event which requires, like, thousands upon thousands of people to be, like, online on their phones all at the same time, maybe, like, have that ready for them.
Yeah, so what
maybe?
What I heard is Niantic told the cellular companies exactly how many people were going to be using the network and how much data load they expected. They gave this information to Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. Based on, and this is literally a source of, based on what was overheard a Niantic employee commenting to another one. So this is down the train here for sourcing. While Sprint did attempt to supply additional trucks that would boost the cellular signal and handle the additional load, AT&T and Verizon took zero action to fortify the network for the increased network load. It was like, yeah. So what's amazing about this whole thing, okay, so Niantic refunded everybody their $25 and gave everybody $100 worth of Pokecoins, okay? So that's
in-game currency.
Yeah, the 14,500 Pokecoins are $100. Now, the amazing thing to me is how much people are whining about this on the internet, and the guy who is from California who's trying to sue them for all this stuff, I'm like, it was a $25 ticket. They promised you $25 worth of an experience. You know, $25 buys you about, like, 3,000 Pokecoins. Okay? So they promised, like, I have spent way more than $25 on this game, but, because, you know, I have a problem. But, like, anybody complaining about, like, how much, like, oh, I paid $3,000 for a scalp ticket, like, right, but it was a 20, like, the company running the event only promised you a $25 experience, not a $3,000 experience. You know, it's, you chose to fly in. Like, the legendaries are still, you know, they released the, you know, the legendaries to the general public. You know, it's, I've got,
we still got the bonuses.
Yeah.
And the bonuses are not just for the people who were at the, like, at the fest. It's for everybody. So, like,
right. Like, I have an Arcticuno. I went out and got that. I don't have a Lugia yet. But I got the, because the Arcticunos are going away. But let me tell you, when a legendary comes out and you're in the middle of the woods and you can't get a raid together to take down a gym, and, like, I was so happy. Like, but we're recording the show on Monday night. I am so glad we canceled recording on Sunday night because it let me go out and get an Arcticuno. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but I don't care. Like, the legendaries are still out there. And, yeah, like, if you traveled for the thing and couldn't get some of the region-locked ones that were, you know, put their specials, guess what? You could have spent that same amount of money and flown to where the region-locked ones are. You were promised a $25 experience. If you, a $25 experience was it. Niantic, like, this isn't like you paid for, like, a Comic-Con pass. You paid for, like, Bob's Comic-Con.
Like, run by the Belcher family. All panels planned by Gene.
Like, it costs more to meet Bill Mumy than it costs to go to this event. And
he was on Lost in Space, damn it.
And Babylon 5. And sang Fish Heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that the people whining about it and the guy filing lawsuit, like, shut up. You know, if you didn't get your $25 back, then complain. But guess what? That's life. Also, if you flew to Chicago just for a $25 event, like, from around the world, like, I wouldn't fly to London to go to a $25 concert.
No. It's not worth it. Like,
no.
Mm-mm.
Like, you know, there are people who fly to, like, New York to go see a musical, but going to see Hamilton costs way more than $25.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you went to, like, stupid. Speaking of stupid.
Mm.
Unless you want to talk about Pokemon Go Fest more.
No. We're good.
All right.
Go ahead and talk about more stupid.
Speaking of stupid,
so much stupid.
This last weekend was Kentucky's Fandom Fest. And boy, oh boy, was that something. So what happened is that just a week or two before the convention, they announced that they were changing venues. Most likely because they never booked their venue. You see, they previously had been, last year they're at the Kentucky Expo Center, and their website, up until this point, had a photo of the Kentucky Expo Center, until a few months ago, had a photo of the Kentucky Expo Center that said Kentucky Expo Center in big letters in the photo. So even though technically no venue was announced on the webpage, the fact that they had been at the Kentucky Expo Center, all the hotels advertised on their hotel section were in the proximity of the Kentucky Expo Center, and, you know, their website had a photo of the Kentucky Expo Center, people assumed it was at the Kentucky Expo Center. Well, it wasn't. Because the Kentucky Expo Center, when people asked them on Twitter, said, "We do not have a contract for Fandom Fest at our facility." They said that on July 17th. The convention was, was July 28th was when that started. So 28th through 30th. So, just under 2 weeks before the con, then the Fandom Fest announced proudly a new location later, hours after that went out. Like, cause that went out and hit the web and people were like, "What is going on?" A few hours later, the con announced their new venue, that they were a new location for 2017. Again, this is announced just less than 2 weeks before the con, after everyone's already reserved their hotel rooms, after people have pre-registered. And it is it was a former Macy's. It was a closed Macy's. They went into a department store. Now, this got worse. So when this whole thing, like, started, so they announced that they were at this closed Macy's, and so needless to say, a lot of the guests freaked out. You know,
like you do. Like you actually do this time.
Yeah, yeah, and so over half of the guest list canceled. Like, there were 40 guests announced, less than 18 showed up. I think it might be even more canceled. I didn't keep track of the cancellations after the first, 22. Any con that has 22 guests cancel, like, within 2 weeks of the con, probably not a good sign. Now, the convention tried to, like, pass this off as, like, standard reasons why guests cancel. And, you know, having one or two guests cancel, fine. Having five guests cancel out of 40, fine. Having 22, something's wrong. So it gets better. So the hotels all advertised, like, this Macy's was at least a 15-minute drive away from the hotels, and there's not good public transportation, really, in Louisville, Kentucky. So people who had planned on walking to the convention from their hotel were kind of SOL. And there was also there was a dead raccoon in the convention space, in big quotes. There are photos of that, so they had to clean up the dead raccoon. And literally, like, the fixtures were still up. Like, vendors like were given like their 10x10 booth space in quotes, and it was like the jewelry counter in a Macy's with the Macy's signage still there. And they weren't allowed to put things in the glass case, just put them on top of the glass case.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was this, and you know, it was advertised as like having like a 5-digit attendance number, but the fire marshals have this place capped at 1,700. And so, from all accounts, no vendors made their money back who showed up.
Oh.
And oh my God. Like, oh my God.
Jeez.
Like, I think Dead Raccoon is the ball pit for 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, so people always talk about disaster cons and compare it to Dash Con, but I believe the Dash Con level of failure is what I call, is an amazing level of failure where the convention has to happen. Like, cons that fall apart and crash before they ever happen don't, like, I don't compare those to Dash Con. Con runners who are just idiots and jerks, I don't compare that to Dash Con. This is Dash Con level, though, where something happened and it was just a complete and total cluster truck. It's...
That's just truly amazing.
There
are no words.
Like, and this had to go down while I was on a lake too, so all my reporting ended up being secondhand because I was not able to capture this while it was happening. But oh my God, like it was a mess in Louisville, Kentucky this last weekend. What did you guys do this last weekend? Again?
We went to Iowa.
Was it still there?
You
went there for like a reason, though, right? Not
yeah, Nick and I sold at the Artist Deli there.
At Anime Iowa,
yes.
Yeah.
At Anime Iowa.
You mean the state of Iowa just doesn't have its own Artist Alley?
It should.
It should.
It'd be great.
Yeah, we went to Anime Iowa, and it at its last year in Coralville. It's going to be moving to
Decatur. Yeah.
Wait, Decatur?
No, not Decatur. I'm sorry.
Decatur's in Illinois.
Yeah.
So do you mean
Anime Iowa in Illinois? Dubuque. That's what it was.
Dubuque.
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Dubuque is in Iowa.
Yeah.
The company I work for has stores in both Dubuque and Decatur.
See,
so
I know Decatur because, as a person raised a Bears fan, the Bears started out their lives as the Decatur Staleys.
Wow. They definitely got a name upgrade.
Anime Iowa is going to be moving to... I'm steamrolling you guys. Hush.
Good.
Anime Iowa will be moving to Decatur.
No!
Because
not Decatur!
Dubuque. Basically, they're outgrowing Coralville. They're outgrowing the Marriott Convention Center in Coralville. So this was their last year there, and I'm going to miss it. I've gone for a couple of years. I was there back. My first one was like back in 08 or 09. And like it's a really nice space. It's
And by the way, they're moving to Des Moines in 2018. Not
I knew
Dubuque.
It started with the D.
Des Moines. It's a D. You were close.
Weren't they? Didn't they used to be in Des Moines at one point before they moved to Coralville? Or were they
in
Iowa City?
They were in a bunch of places.
When all else fails,
they've been everywhere.
Wiki. It's on the wiki.
Wikipedia. Iowa City. Iowa City. Cedar Rapids. Des Moines in 2004. Through 2004, 2005, they were in Des Moines. And then Cedar Rapids and Coralville. And then they stayed in Coralville for a long... I think Coralville's been their longest home.
Yeah, because they found the Marriott, and that's like a really big, nice
space.
But they're outgrowing it, so...
And it's a shame. This is my first ever Anime Iowa, and I loved the venue.
So I'm gonna... Like, I've been going to cons forever. I've never been to Anime Iowa. Because, you know, it's when we started No Brand Con, which, full disclosure, I am back on No Brand Con staff. When we started No Brand Con, Anime Iowa is one of the few cons, the anime cons in the Midwest that predates us. It was them and Anime Central that predate us in the Midwest. Mm. There's only two I can think of. And, or at least in the region of the Midwest where we are. And it was too expensive to go there versus starting our own con.
And then
it's always just been bad timing for me. Like, because you guys were in Anime Iowa, I was on a lake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get you. But no, it's a larger convention. The last numbers I remember that are recorded are from a couple years ago, and that was 3,000. And it's gotten bigger since then. Mm-hmm. So
well,
it's
I know their,
really...
their attendance was capped at 3,000.
Okay.
Back in the day. Unless they've expanded the conference center.
I'm not sure. I know that...
Hey, Corfan, why don't you tell us? Corfan,
yeah.
You know, you used to work for Anime Iowa, Corfan. You know, you must know people still there. You tell us. Just write in.
But no, it was really nice, really fun. I really enjoyed being able to show Nick, like, how it was different than the conventions, like, up here in Wisconsin, because especially the cosplay scene is so much more diverse.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Than most of the Wisconsin cons. And yeah, I mean, that's something that a cosplay scene being like a couple years in the past. But no, it was really awesome.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun. Poor Gen had to put up with me telling really bad puns all weekend.
Mm-hmm. aren't bad puns your biggest selling point, Nick?
Kind of. I mean, that and video essays, sort of. Who am I kidding? No one cares about those.
I care about those, Nick. I care about those. I haven't watched your
you
latest
just care.
One.
That you just care about those because they give content for the website that you don't have
I
to
care.
Make.
I watch them. I just haven't watched the most recent one because it came out while I didn't really have internet.
Ah. Well, I'm proud of it. And next
you should
up,
be proud
I
of it.
Have
I haven't watched it, but you should be proud of it.
Next up, I have to sit down and talk about the Fate franchise, which incidentally, I saw a lot of cosplay from at Anime Iowa.
Woohoo.
Right.
Three different
things. So, Nick, what were your thoughts about Anime Iowa in general being your first year there?
I really liked it. I thought it was I really liked the people. The con staff seemed a little too sticklery to the rules at some points, to the point that it was just kind of annoying. But on the other hand, yeah, I loved, like, the attendees were all really cool and really enthusiastic about the things they like. And I like fans who are excited to be fans. Like I said, I loved all the cosplay I saw. And added bonus that I guess I won't have to look forward to in coming years, their convention concessions were pretty fantastic. There was a concession stand right in the vendor hall with us, and we ate well for cheap.
Yeah.
For cheap being the important thing, because lots of, you know, like, you can get beer in the dealer room at ASEN.
Uh-huh.
I know, but...
It's
expensive.
Yeah,
the
key part.
Yeah, $6 for a pretty large size pulled pork sandwich. That was delicious.
Was the most expensive item.
That was the most expensive item. And it was, everything else ranged from $3 to $5 on their menu.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was really excellent.
Sounds like someone needs to run a convention in that hotel.
Hey.
Again, get on that. Go to work.
I'll stick to just selling at them instead. But I'll be excited to see their new space and where they're going to in the future.
Neat. I'm excited too. So that'll be fun.
All right, then. If that's all you have to say about anyway, we should move on to the mailbag.
Yep, yep.
What all's in our mailbag? Whew.
Again, I think you've got a letter there from Keith Shizuo.
I do. And it says, "G'day, Poindexters and Railway Sleepers. I have to say that I agree with Trey on the Waters of Mars thing.
See, I'm right.
I found the plot to be a bit too absurd, and it also didn't help that I had just come off my first Classic Who binge and was annoyed that it was against the stuff in Pyramids of... It was against the stuff in
Pyramids of Mars.
Pyramids of Mars. And I was a bit of a stickler for the old canon, and still am. Recently, however, I've realized that such an attitude is futile, considering the diverse range of creatives and showrunners and the evolving public perception. So now I'm trying to do each more of an adaptation than a continuation, which I suppose gives Doctor Who more creative freedom than almost any other sci-fi series. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to grumble about it, though. I can't be the only person begging for the melding monk to come back.
The meddling monk is what he meant to write. I just want to interject there that... So the thing about Doctor Who canon is that it's constantly changing because it's a time travel show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and actually, there's a really good demonstration of how Capaldi's first season, some of the stuff with Danny Pink,
mm-hmm.
that the timeline changes throughout that season for what was. So remember, when watching Doctor Who, that just because it looks like a canon snarl doesn't mean it is, because the Doctor's had a ton of adventures you haven't seen. There are other Time Lords running around, and just because it happened one way, well, last time we went to that place in that time, doesn't mean that it is anywhere near that anymore due to all the changes that can happen to the timeline.
I didn't even have that much of an in-canon approach to it. I just think that worrying about continuity with Doctor Who is futile.
Well, no, I believe that in-canon... In canon, the continuity is flexible and ever changing.
Right.
So you can never trust that you know the canon, because it was canon when it happened, but
it might not be anymore.
It's literally a story about changing the timeline constantly, all the time,
mm-hmm.
and the butterfly effect happens, my friend. Sorry again. You may continue reading, Keith. Thinking but digger. Gen? Are you alive, Gen?
I think Gen might have froze.
I'm only 80% certain that Gen is frozen. Should I continue reading the letter then?
You can or I can. But I have the next letter.
Well, you've got the next letter. So, okay. Keith continues, "I'm as excited as everyone for the new series and interested to know your opinion of the new showrunner, as I can't remember if you've discussed it before. To be honest, after Davis and Moffat, I'd settle for John Nathan Turner." Okay, maybe that's an overreaction.
No one is John Nathan Turner.
I will say that Keith later reached out to me on Twitter and said that he was writing this letter while he was listening to our Doctor Who special, and so he we actually did discuss all of our thoughts about the new showrunner in the special episode from, a couple weeks ago. So, if you want to know our thoughts about the new Doctor Who showrunner, and all of our things about that with Chibnall, although I will say that I liked Russell T. Davies. I was a defender of Russell T. Davies while he was showrunner.
I love Russell T. Davies. I still do.
I watched in amazement as a lot of the fandom came around to my opinion after Moffat became showrunner and people realized what could have been happening the whole time. but I always liked Russell T. Davies' stuff. So again, I read an extra paragraph. So if you want to pick it up from Finally Something.
Finally, something that irked me quite a bit in the last episode. Think about Nurse Who, because it has been widely established that the Doctor is not a physician, but is incarnation himself an engineer. Keith, fix your spelling. It's hard to read. In opposition to being called a physician, Marco Polo, and in almost every other instance, a scientist. I point this out because these, the supposed fans that are...
Apparently.
I think this is apparently so worried about this series have not even seemed to pick up on this most fundamental characteristic of the Doctor in their blind opposition to Whittaker, because apparently girls can't do science. Sorry, I just had to rant about that a little. May Jodie Whittaker's reign be as long and prosperous as David Whittaker's before her. Continue Obi-Wanning in the 50% off world.
All right. So I want to make a correction here. So he did talk about not being a medical doctor in some earlier in some of his incarnations, but in other incarnations, they have explicitly referred to the doctor as applying to like a medical doctor as the man who fixes things. As like him being the inspiration for the word doctor becoming meaning a person who heals people. The show has been anything if inconsistent in applying where the term doctor, like whether it's supposed to be like a doctorate or whether it's supposed to be like a medical doctor. In fact, actually the it's implied heavily that the doctor is purposely vague about it.
I just think Nurse Who is a stupid and sexist insult.
It's just
stupid
a dumb
and sexist
insult
people
because
use.
There are women doctors. It's not like there are no women doctors in the real world.
There are women doctors and there are male nurses. And
heck, in Russia, the medical field is dominated by women doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the heck, you morons? This isn't 1942.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... And there were women doctors then, too. it's frustrating, and it is a headache, but it's okay. Stephen Moffat said that if you pay attention to canon, the doctor's name actually is Doctor Who, and actually he made a really good argument in canon for why the doctor's name secretly is Doctor Who.
I hate Stephen Moffat.
But
so
no,
much.
But I will say he cited a bunch of stuff, and I went, he's not wrong. Like, I mean, he.
If
literally...
I ever meet him, I'm gonna kick him in the dick.
But
I'm
he's
just...
not. I love the way he. If you have you guys, you guys haven't watched the Nick. Have you seen the end of the most recent season yet?
I haven't watched any of the most recent season yet. I have seen up through the Zygon episode of Series 9.
Okay, it's not that much of a spoiler to say that that the Master is obviously in the new season.
Right.
Right. There is a whole scene where I hate calling the Master Missy, so I will when I refer to the Master, I am referring to the Michelle Gomez incarnation of the Master.
I think.
But, because I love her in the role, and I love the character, I just... The Master. The Master's her name. Her name is the Master. Anyways.
Furthermore, I don't like that the name Missy, but that's
yeah,
hard.
But that's the only thing I don't like about her in the role is the insisting on calling her Missy. I will say that the one she does a whole thing about how the Doctor's real name is Doctor Who. And it is like that her name that his name actually is Doctor Who. And goes on this like whole thing about like and points out I was a school you know boyhood friend I know like his name really is Doctor Who, and it's the Doctor implies that the Master is just messing with Bill, but it's presented as though the Master is joking.
Okay, we'll see,
but. But I will say, outside of the continuity of the show, and Stephen Moffat says, you don't have to agree with me the way this fan, you know, anything can be changed by the next writer in 5 minutes. But, so, like, Stephen Moffat, I will say, but Stephen Moffat made a really strong canon argument for why his name really is Doctor Who, secretly. I'm just saying. Take us to our next letter, Nick.
Yeah, let's just look at what else I got now. Like, from our old buddy Archimize, long time no write. Hey, nerds and those who wear ties. Sorry it's been so long since my last write-in. Life's pretty busy lately, So I seem to have fallen behind on regular activities. My backlog of CW shows is a couple months long, and my anime set is even longer. I promise to finish Iron-Blooded Orphans someday. Or excuse me, Blood Iron Orphans, because Arkham Eyes refuses to say the most recent Gundam series name correctly.
Why is that?
One thing I've noticed lately is when a new trailer drops for movies, unless I'm literally forced to watch them as part of a commercial, I don't tend to seek them out. Well, I know the Nerd and Tie team watches them for the sake of the site, and for fun, I imagine. What trailers do you wish you hadn't watched before seeing the actual film? Either they gave away a spoiler, set a different tone for the movie, or simply put you off to the movie that you later found out you enjoyed.
That's a good question. Like, I had been complaining about Spider-Man Homecoming's trailers giving away most of the story of the movie, except they did manage to hide, like, a big enough central plot element from those trailers that I still felt satisfied going to the movies.
Catch Me If You Can, the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, directed by Steven Spielberg, also starring Tom Hanks, had one of the worst trailers ever shot for any movie ever. It made it look absolutely banal and stupid and silly, and it's one of my favorite dramas.
It's
absolutely
a great movie.
Yeah, it was the first movie that I loved Leonardo DiCaprio in. Yeah, it's an excellent movie. But the trailer would not make you think that. Oh, Star Trek Beyond! Star Trek Beyond's trailer looked like shite. And then that movie was like my favorite movie of last year.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many things. Like, as I watch so many trailers, that I think the problem is because I watch all, like, so I'm the one who for the site watches all the trailers for the site. Like, every time there's a new big trailer for a big project, I think I missed an It trailer during Comic-Con while I was on the lake. But every time there's a new big trailer for something, I watch the trailer. And I have to do a write-up on it. And I have to grab screen grabs and be able to say something about it. So I watch them, like, I watch every trailer that we post about, like, 3 or 4 times before we post it. And I'm kind of, like, I know what's trailer and what's actually movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's because the secret to trailers is that they're not edited by the people who actually make the movie. I think one of the most weird examples of this is Highlander Endgame, which came out like probably 17 years ago, something like that. And there's a bunch of footage in the trailer for that movie, which is nowhere near the film, which was literally test video effects that the editors who made the trailer knew was, like, there's a scene where the Immortal, like, splits himself, like, the bad guy splits himself in half. And, like, turns into two versions of himself. And that is not in the film, and it was never meant to be in the film. But it got put in the trailer by an editor who thought it looked cool. So I'll say, if I need to pick one, I'll say Highlander Endgame, because it misrepresented some of the stuff in the movie. And I'm okay with misrepresenting some stuff in the movie if it still sets the same tone. Like, obviously Rogue One did so many reshoots that 90, like, over half the trailer is not in the movie. Or versions of scenes are fundamentally different. Like the lack of a TIE fighter in a certain scene that looks like it's literally, I think, our screen grab on, like, one of the trailer posts is of that TIE fighter rising up, and that's not in the film. But there is a method to trailers. Like, it's like you're hearing cover songs. Like, it's that movie's cover version of a song. And every movie's trailer's the same. And you're going to hit the same beats at the same times in the same order. And you're going to get the classic, like, and trailers go through phases. Like, you know, there's been a big deal with, like, putting classic rock songs in at certain points in recent history that really started with Guardians of the Galaxy kicking it off. And then everybody imitated that in their trailers. And the difference is Guardians of the Galaxy, like, actually uses that kind of music in the soundtrack to the film. But, and Suicide Squad tried to. Suicide Squad said, hey, look, those lovable misfits have this rock and roll soundtrack, but let's give it that. Except instead of integrating it into the plot and make it a key essential element the way James Gunn did. Like, they just kind of tossed crap on the movie and said, hey, let's stick it to the wall, see if it's did for them. But anyways, so the problem is that when you watch 15, 20 trailers a month, you learn that trailers are meaningless. You learn to spot a bad movie from the trailer, like a really bad movie you can spot from the trailer, but you can't tell a mediocre film from a good film from a trailer. You can tell that there are bones there sometimes. Like, it's, you have to watch carefully. Like, the Power Rangers trailer, you could actually, like, all these people talk about how bad the movie looked, but I was just, like, I watched it, and I was like, no. You're looking at the trailer junk. Like, they're talking about how serious it seemed, but I'm like, there are, like, 5 jokes in that trailer. It's just that the editor kind of rolled over them. And so...
Yeah, I remember I did not like that trailer at all, and that was one of my favorite movies of this year.
Yeah, and
so that's
why I'm using it as an example, because it was a very conventional trailer. They were all very conventional trailers for that film, and they rolled over the unique elements, and so it's only if you've seen 20 trailers that month that follow the exact same pattern that you start noticing the parts that aren't part of the formula.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can identify a good movie from the trailer, but... you definitely know what bad elements are just from the trailer formula and what are actually inherent from the film. See, like, Zack Snyder makes a good trailer because he does very good action directing. But, you know, you can't sell the story in a trailer.
Right.
But you can set tone in dialogue, but you can't pay attention to the way that dialogue is edited for the trailer. Trailers are...
Mm-hmm.
Freaking, you know, I watch a
trailers
lot.
Trailers are weird, man.
I watch a lot of trailers, and for you, the home audience, not for Nick, or
I'd say I don't watch nearly as
they
many
can.
Trailers.
They can watch trailers if they want or not, but for you, the listeners, for you, the readers, I watch all of these trailers, and I try to come up with something interesting to say about it, and sometimes I can't, and that happens after Comic-Con, after like the third trailer, but like. It's a formula, and you got to learn to, like, you got to look for the improv. You got to look for the bits that fall outside the formula to determine anything. And so, because trailers are designed to get you excited, then you got to ignore those bits.
Ken, do you have any trailers that you...
Not any specific ones that I can remember at the moment. I just... get really annoyed when there's like stuff in the trailer that's not in the movie and there's like 2 totally different things. That's all.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable.
I know there are major twists that have been given away by trailers over time. It's just that I'm blanking on a lot of them right now because it's like 85 degrees in where I'm recording right now. Because there's no air conditioning in my office, so like I'm sure that I can come up with like 20, or 5, or 2 at least. But I'm just totally blanking. But I sure did talk a lot.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, closing out Arkhamize's letter. That's all for now. I promise it won't be several months before I write in again, Arkhamize.
It'll be 2 years. Now, He did not write a letter to Shameless Otaku.
He did not, no.
I think he knows that Shameless Otaku isn't listening.
Seems that way.
Shameless Otaku doesn't love you anymore, Arkhamize. I'm sorry. He doesn't care. He's ghosting you. And we feel for you and your love. So, anyways, moving on to our next letter. Instead of talking about the love story for the ages between Arkhamize and Shameless Otaku, we have one last one from Corfan. Corfan wrote the shortest thing ever here. Subject, Blade Runner 2049 trailer. Hey, if Deckard's still around in 2049, then he's not a replicant. Well, that's a good question. So, yeah, he shouldn't be alive if he's a replicant.
Mm-hmm.
That is arguably true. They have, though, said that the version of Blade Runner that is in continuity with this new movie is the 2007 edit, which does heavily hint that Deckard's a replicant. So what if he's just not a normal replicant?
I don't think Blade Runner should have a sequel in the first place.
I'm okay with it. I'm not.
You know, and I mean, and it's not even like, and to clarify for people who don't know, this isn't like, this is a movie I'm just kind of ambivalent about. I have the limited edition set, Voight-Kampff set that has all five cuts of the movie on it and the little police spinner and everything. Jeez. I really love that movie, and I don't feel the need for more. And I feel like addressing and answering some of the questions left open is just asking to ruin things.
I don't think
because it
gonna,
almost always does.
Yeah, I think I don't think they're going to answer a lot of the questions.
Oh, they've been promising to in some of the promotional things.
I think that they're screw it. It's, you know what? Honestly, I'm excited, and I'm going to let myself be excited, and I'm going to let myself be disappointed if it's not any good, because I guess like I love Blade Runner for the like I love the fact that it had an open-ended ending. But overall, I guess I kind of just liked the adventure of the noir detective story. Like, the important thing for me about Blade Runner is not that necessarily that it left open questions. It was that everything was terrible. I thought it was really clear what was going to happen. It's the only question was whether or not Deckard was a human or a replicant.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's because you know what's going to happen to what's-her-face.
Rachel. Yeah, Rachel's
going to
die.
You know Rachel's going to die. You know it. Like, you know she's going to die. And the question isn't, you know, the question is a moral one. And it's really presented that the replicants are as... If anything, Deckard being a human, the way his story plays out just shows that replicants are just as human as the humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that there is a question. I think the Deckard being a replicant
I'm
or
just
not
saying,
is a question.
What
but
more is there to explore?
I think there's
really
some exploration of what it means for a society to be relying on a clone slave caste.
Yeah, I just, like, I think we already, I don't know, I'm afraid of where they're going to take it, and honestly, the trailer just would, that I saw the one trailer, and it was just so explosion-heavy and action-beady, I'm just like, eh.
I want my trailers to be explosion-heavy and action-beady, because then they don't
tell
the story.
I don't want Blade Runner to be explosion-heavy.
Well, but it was.
No, it wasn't.
Well, I mean, for the time period, like, I mean, it was very action-heavy.
Are you even thinking of the same movie?
Yeah. I can definitely cut a trailer full of just as much action from the original Blade Runner. And I want you to remind yourself about Star Trek Beyond.
I know. I am remembering that. It's just not something that I really want. I never looked at Blade Runner and thought, well, this needs a sequel.
I think I looked at it and said, it as long as the sequel's good, I don't care. That's honestly a lot of these things. Like, I don't think The Matrix needed sequels because I think that the more you think about The Matrix, the less it makes sense. And I don't think that... But, like, if a sequel's good, I'm all for it. And so, I'll agree with you that it doesn't need a sequel if a sequel turns out to suck. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. If the sequel's good... Or even if I just like it, then I'll say, you're wrong. Again, what are your thoughts about the Blade Runner sequel?
You guys aren't going to like me again because I haven't seen the first one.
Oh, man. Okay, so, again, I'm not mad at you for not having seen it. You're of the age where it's not necessary. Like, people... who weren't alive when it came out often get a pass on whether or not they've seen it. You should totally watch it, though.
Yeah. I fully intend to.
You don't have to watch all five edits that Nick has.
No.
But know that there are five edits of the film.
Okay.
And I think the recommended version is the 2007 final director's cut. Because there's more than one director's
cut. Yeah, the final cut. Yeah.
The final cut. Because there is more than one director's cut of the film.
Because of course there is.
Yeah.
So Nick, that's our movie night next time I come down.
Okay. Sounds good.
So with that, we should move on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. Agreed?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read to you a part of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, we include your name on the Hall of Awesome page on our website. Two, I read your name aloud on every normal episode of the podcast. And three, nothing else, because, again, this is a dumb little fun game, and we're broke. So, the
what
current...
What more do you want from me?
The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite, Zero, Renan, Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slitheridi, Shameless Otaku, The Ram Ramblings, Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lulisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, Minnesota Librarians, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. That to be them. Now, we've been reading from the same book for a little while. And so I'm going to open it back up here, and I'm going to pick a random sentence. And they have been visited occasionally by the floating spar of some hurricane-swept ship. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, click on the forum, tell us about it, tell us what book it's from, and you'll win. Or if you just feel like writing to us about anything else, hit that page. Tell us your thoughts, your dreams, your hope, your wisdom, your truth. Why you think Gen needs to scream at a monkey for 3 hours, or why you think Nick needs to wrestle a manatee. Any of these things. Why do I need to shave a bat symbol into the back of my head? All of this stuff and more. Go ahead, tell us your thoughts, or you, besides the contact page, you can also call us and leave us a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480 and leave us a voicemail, and we will literally play your own voice on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
It'll be amazing.
Or...
For you.
Yeah, like, literally, just pick up a phone. They exist. You can use your voice on it and everything.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Take your Jedi weapon and strike me down.
Oh, God. We should get out of here.
Yeah, we should go.
All right.
All right. Here we are coming at you live from the Nerder Dome. I will always be Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm the Genjamin.
And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter and Facebook. And remember to check out our other projects, including Trey and I both have Patreon pages. And feel free to check out Trey's webcomics, Ocelot Dude Designs on Google, and The Nick Izumi Show on YouTube.
Yeah, let's remember to specifically call out that Nick's Patreon is patreon.com/Nick Izumi. Mine is patreon.com/TRAEGORN, Trey Gorn. You can subscribe to Nerd and Tie on Tumblr, on Twitter, on Facebook. We're all Nerd and Tie at all of those things. On YouTube, our channel is youtube.com/TRAEGORN, and all of our videos will go there, except for the Nick Izumi Show videos, which you can find at youtube.com/Nick Izumi.
Indeed.
Remember that in your heart and your mind and your soul, we are all people, one with the night in the daylight, or other things that we do at times of day in which we are people. And also subscribe to us on iTunes, like Nick said earlier, because that's a thing. And you can do it.
Keep on Spocking in the free world. Found the